Fish, 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 fish. I've gone fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fish. Boy, I'm going fishing. Just to ease my mind.
That's what I was waiting for, just to ease my mind. Yes, I'm kind of sitting there and waiting for that to happen because I could use a little ease my mind meant right about now. Fishing Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ, the one who usually keeps us under control, is suspiciously missing.
Right.
We're not sure if there's mischievous intent involved in this or not, but
it's going to be hard to rein you in.
Yeah, well, there's nobody to control this. It's gonna be crazy. Just a couple of wild and crazy guys here.
Yeah, that was a bad Aykroyd imitation. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I suck. Okay.
Oh, no, that was Jim Belushi that did that one, didn't he?
I don't remember.
One of the two.
Yeah,
it was somebody. Either way, it was still
back
terrible.
When they were funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, okay. That one would probably still be funny. It's just not too well off.
So... yeah, it's one of the few things where you think, man, why don't you hire some of the old guys back? You know, they actually had a sense of humor.
Right.
All right. Let's see. According to the fish world, spring breakers are showing up around Florida in massive amounts. The numbers are up. The people are up. They're all over. And they want to catch big fish. Now, Robert, is there a shot at big fish, or is this just a fish dream in the water that's not going to realize, but... is this good, bad, good witch, bad witch, sandwich?
It's actually a good witch.
Okay.
Surprisingly enough, you know, normally March is windy, chilly, cold fronts, you know, relatively speaking, and our big fish aren't here. But, hey, tarpon are here.
Sharks are here.
There's actual fishable numbers of tarpon, fishable numbers of larger sharks, like in the 4 to 7 foot range. There's even some cobias starting to show up inshore and offshore that are... marginally legal size.
Okay. They changed the legal size in cobia,
yeah,
though, didn't they? 36?
36, I think it is now.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I'm curious about is we're hearing about cobia all over the place.
Right.
But, more importantly, cobia is not really a targetable fish, I would say. You know what I mean? If you're going out to the reefs and you're grouper fishing or you're doing stuff like that, you can find... cobia and you know, stuff on the reefs, but I would still classify that as bycatch. You can go cruise the sandbars and look for them, and maybe you'll see them, but to me it's still a bycatch fish.
Right. I mean, it truly is a bycatch around here. Like you said, though, if you really want to devote the time and burning gas, there has been guys that have gone out and had 10-15 fish days cruising the bars this time of year because it's clear water. But
you almost want a tower boat, big hat, super glasses, pair of binoculars.
Yeah, and hope for the best, because, I mean, even then, that's 20 years of working here. I've only heard that story a couple of different times. So, realistically, it's I would say it's 99% time bycatch.
I would say go out and look for tarpon right now, and you're just as likely to run across tarpon or cobia while you're tarpon fishing.
Right.
Now, there is places we can go and actually target tarpon. I mean, to go and say, okay, we're going to go tarpon fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing mixed reports down off of Sanibel, off of Knapp's Point, but most importantly, close to home, there's actual fishable fish in the pass, in Boca Grande Pass itself.
So there's tarpon in Boca Grande Pass.
Yeah, and they have been for, 2 weeks now? We've been getting mixed reports, and every day it seems like there's a few more.
Now, are they up on the hill yet at all?
The weird part is that they're in there at night, and they're there in the morning with that outgoing tide. And as soon as that incoming tide turns, those fish are disappearing, and nobody's been able to figure them out yet. So The only thing I can figure is the harbor's 3-4 degrees warmer. So that's what's keeping them active and happy inside the pass. But Carl went out yesterday. He found them in the morning. As soon as that tide went slack, those fish started to spread out. He didn't find them on the pan. He didn't find them on any of the nearshore reefs and couldn't find them inside. But a couple of guys have found fish between Cape Hayes and Boquilla in that usual summertime spot. So I think they're actually coming in way past the hill and come up in the straits, basically.
up between Boquilla and Cape Hayes, and
yeah, marker 6, Boquilla, Cape Hayes, that big triangle there. If you want to make it a box, you go Devilfish to Boquilla to marker 6 to Cape Hayes over to
Devilfish. That's a pretty big box.
It's a big box, but
big fish.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at, you know, several hundred fish should be rolling around. I mean, I'd rather narrow it down to that 12, 18 square miles than what, how many hundred square miles of Charlotte Harbor?
Good point. Good point.
You know, and it's nice enough, clear enough, and that water out there is so blue, and the mornings have been so calm. You should be able to see a mirror shine off of the scales from those fish from quite some distance.
So, okay, I'm heading out of Charlotte Harbor from Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going down the harbor, and what am I looking for?
Number one, I mean, as I'm on my way, because there's resident fish that are going to be leaving all the canals and up in the rivers, both the Myakka and the Peace, there's a possibility of some fish showing up in the 20-foot holes. So I'm going to zigzag my way down the harbor. I'm not just going to make a straight beeline for it. So I'm going to look for rolling fish, maybe a lucky free jumping fish, or I'm also going to look for bait. If I see some schools of bait, I'm going to at least do a very slow drive-by or even a drift and see what we can see.
Okay.
Yeah, 'cause
now, what tackle am I going to take? Do I need special rod, reel, or lures, or, you know, do I need special bait? If we were going to go into Boca Grande Pass, because that's the most likely place to find tarpon right
now.
Absolutely. Early in the morning, later in the day, overnight, you can actually find these 100, 200-pound fish. What am I going to take there to do it?
I'm probably going to realistically use my spinning tackle. You know, my tarpon rod that I use is an 8-foot heavy action, you know, 15 to 30 class rod with a 6,000 size reel with 50-pound braid and a 60 or 80-pound fluorocarbon leader. That's going to be probably my primary setup that I'll take with me, and I'm going to use live bait.
Now, star rod, so that's the 15 to 30, but if it was a Daiwa or maybe a Shimano, it might be a 20 to 40 be better?
Correct.
Because different brands classify their rods differently.
Right.
So if I was going to use a Shimano rod, say, I'd probably be looking for a 20 to 40 in a Shimano,
yep,
where a 15 to 30 in a Star would be better. You know, boys and girls, there's no government standard on these rods. A lot of this stuff goes out, and people actually believe what they read on them. Best thing to do is literally test the tip. Make sure it's reasonably tight with a little bit of action at the tip so you can kind of zing a bait a bit.
Right.
But now, if I'm in the past,
are you... It's just a good starting point for a rod. It kind of gives you a ballpark to be in.
Yeah, it gives you a ballpark. So we've got 60-pound test leader on.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm using a smaller blue crab, I've probably got a 5-aught hook.
Yeah.
If I'm using a larger bait, like a bigger thread fin or, say, a squirrel fish,
mm-hmm,
something like that, I might go up to 6 or 8-aught, even a 9-aught hook. If I'm using a circle hook, I'm probably in the 7 to 9-aught range.
Correct.
So, you know, you have to have enough hook to get through the bait is kind of it. So hook size is more due to the bait. Now, most of us don't go below 5-aught in any case, because of the thickness of the jaw on a tarpon.
Right.
You've got to have a hook big enough to get around the jaw. And so you want to use
through it.
Or through it. It's, but if you, too small of a hook, it'll just come right off of it.
Yeah.
They'll never even get it attached. So starting at 5-aught to 9-aught, depending on the brand, depending on the style of hook, those are your ranges in the hook. And I know it's a big range, but if you're using a VMC or the Eagle Claw trocars,
mm-hmm,
if you're using a trocar or VMC, I'm going to say 6, 7, 8, 9-aught if it's a real big bait.
Correct. I'm going to go with you on that. The only thing
those are the circle hook sizes.
That's in the circle hooks. The only thing I would add to that would be the owner also, because they're very similar in size to the VMCs.
Right. The owner, VMC, and trocars really run fairly true to size.
Right. Well, and I explain to people all the time, you are one of the few, and you've taught me this with all the writing over the years, that, you know, circle hooks aren't standardized, so one company's 6-aught is another company's 8-aught is another company's 4-aught. You know, so every time you write an article, you write the actual brand of the circle, and it's not because they're paying you to write the story. It's because they're so hard to decipher the right size. Right.
No one is paying us to say anything good or bad about any products. We actually tried that for, what, about 6 months?
Yeah.
Six, 7 months, we tried selling ads and doing that. We were making a lot of money doing it, but it screwed up the show.
Yeah.
Because it's not what we do. We don't want fishing tackle advertisers or sponsors, because we want to tell you guys what we actually think.
Yeah, we want the honest truth.
And so when you're listening to us, these are our opinions. You can take them as fact, fiction, whatever you like, but this is what we believe, this is what we think is true. And we're not getting paid to say good or bad things about anything, because it really messes up the quality of the show.
It does.
So we gave up the money and said, nope, we're just on our own. We're going to do our thing the way we want to, so that we can stay who we are.
Right.
We're going to be poor at the end of this. We were poor when we started. We're going to be poor when we finished. It's not going to change our lives. So that little bit of money just made things bad. So anyway, that being said, what we're trying to explain is that J-hooks, the normal hook where you have an eye at the top, goes around and bends, and the point of the hook goes straight up, they started those in the 14, 15, 16, 17, 1800s. And the names like Aberdeen and all this, those are names of towns in England where those hooks originated from. And all of these things have been kind of standardized over the last 200-300 years. But with the circle hooks have been out for thousands of years. But they were meant as a catch and kill hook. They're not a catch and release hook. They are a catch and kill hook, and that's the truth. They were designed by early Polynesians and to hang under a float, put out, and so the fish could not get off of the hook.
Right.
They were designed to hook, capture, kill fish. But the fishing industry in the U.S. did not pick up on these hooks till about 10 years ago.
Except for the commercial industry.
The commercial industry has been using them for years because it's an excellent catch and kill hook.
Exactly.
The recreational industry started with the circle hooks, and all of a sudden everybody had to make circle hooks. And so they were just out there going, okay, well, this is a 1 out of 3 out of 4 out of whatever they are. And they just kind of sized them however they wanted and didn't bother to look at what anybody else was doing, because it was all so new. They were in a rush to get them out.
Yeah.
That's why there's no set sizes on circle hooks. But back into the tarpon, we figured out we've got 50-pound line braided on our spinning rod. You can use 65 if you want. About 60-pound test leader, and we've got either J-hook or a circle hook, whichever one makes you feel better. I use the J-hooks. A lot of people use circle hooks. Now, for on the end of those...
And just to clarify that, too, in Boca Grande Pass, there is absolutely no law that says you have to use circle hooks for tarpon fishing. A lot of people ask us that every year. And the only time it is required is if you are fishing a specific tournament that the rules call that. But the state law says you can use J-hook or a circle hook.
They have not drank the Kool-Aid yet on that.
Right.
They get the reason we have circle hook laws on the reef fish is because they went out with some celebrity who paints a lot of pretty pictures on his shirts and pictures and all this stuff, and they were so impressed with him, and he never bothered to mention while he was endorsing that you have to use circle hooks because it's an environmentally friendly one. He owned the hook removal company for circle hooks.
Right.
So we're not going to mention that part of it, but that's why we have circle hook laws in the Gulf, because they went out with a celebrity, because he was so cool, they just did whatever he wanted. Now, getting back into the tarpon, what's the bait out there? Now, me, I'm going to probably take a shrimp.
In a heartbeat. I'm right there 100% with you.
I'm
going to
try
one.
And get a select, a hand-picked, a jumbo shrimp, and I'm going to put them on. I'm not sure I'm going to use much for weight. I might use either a pinch on, something maybe about a quarter ounce at the most, and I'm going to be pitching them up into the current and letting them drift past me going down into the current for those tarpon. I don't think I'm just going to be like jigging them or drifting them that way.
No. I mean, it depends on the current, the type of boat you have, but if you can set up your boat where you can do a very, very controlled drift, And like you said, cast way up current, let it slowly sink down. Try to stay up with it a little bit so you can keep it vertical for at least a short period of time, or at least in that strike zone where those schools, because you're going to see them on your sonar. If you got a bottom machine, it's going to help save you a lot of time in that pass.
Now, what I do when I get into Boca Raton Pass, I figure out if the tide's coming in or going out, and I go up into the current watching my bottom machine until I see fish. Once I see the fish, then I'll stop the boat. I let the nose flow back so that the engine is up current. Now, once the engine's up current, I go into reverse, and that allows the bow of the boat to trail behind the motor in the current. And so I'm going to be able to sit there and kind of hold my place in the current. Now, what I'm going to do is cast my shrimp way up into the current as far as I can and try and feed out a little bit of line, close the bail, and now I'm going to wait and I'm going to watch that line, because the current's going to grab that line and swing it down, and the bait's going to go down because it wants to fall. It's got a little bit of lead on it. But in the same moment, the current is taking the line, acting like a parachute to pull that bait along with the current, and it's eventually going to swing it back up towards the top,
right,
as it gets down there. Once it gets back up, I see it dragging out in the top, reel it in, and recast the same way. And the trick to it is your shrimp is kind of going, you're not really in good contact with it. You got a lot of belly in the line. The current's pulling that belly in the line and moving your shrimp through. What you want to watch for is that line moving away quickly.
Right.
When that line starts to move different than the current is dragging it, that's when you've got a fish on it.
Start reeling.
You're not going to really feel that hit until it's almost too late to set the hook. You got to pay attention to that line, and all of a sudden the belly starts tightening up, get your rod tip down a little bit, and you feel a little bit, lift hard. It's not a jerk. It's a good solid lift. Pull it back, let the fish bow the rod a bit, and then give a couple, two, three good jerks against the bow and the rod. But wait, you know, you're feeling it. I'll take my rod from about 8:30 down on, you know, offside of the boat about 8:30, and I'm coming all the way up to about 11 o'clock in a nice smooth motion, not a jerking motion, a good, where all of a sudden I'm feeling that line get a little tight, and then I just pull up to about 11. I hold, I feel the weight of the fish on the rod, and I give two or three sharp jerks on the rod. And right. I kind of do that. Even when guys have stuck me with circle hooks, I still do it that way, because that tarpon is such a hard mouth. I want to make sure that hook caught.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, the inside of their mouth of a tarpon is compared to a cinder block.
Yeah, it's just rough cartilage in there. It's really hard to get a point of anything in it.
That's why they always count the jumps and the lands of tarpon, because you jump far more than you'll ever land, and it's because that bone in their mouth, the jaw bone, is just way too strong to get a hook to bury. Even a good sharp hook is really tricky.
All right, but now if you don't feel like you're using shrimp, what's another good idea? Are you kind of into the crabs, pinfish, greenbacks? What are you hearing anything, what the guys are hooking up with?
A handful of them are catching them on squirrel fish, which is a normal pattern for them this time of year. Because they come in from the Gulf and from the Keys, so they feed out there on those sand perch / squirrel fish on a regular basis.
All right, so to get the squirrel fish, you're going to go out through Boca Raton Pass, get out in around 25, 30 feet of water, take about a half, three-quarter ounce little jig. I use that VMC...
Hot skirt.
And I put a piece of shrimp on it. And if you can use any jig, it doesn't have to be that one, just pick a little bucktail jig or something like that, put a piece of shrimp meat on it, cast it out, drift the boat along while you bounce that along the bottom, and boom, you hook a little fish, bring it up. If it's kind of cigar shaped, I guess would be the best way, with little blue lines all over it, that's mm-hmm. a squirrel fish.
Yep.
Put them in the live well. If you get a big one, save it, that's great eating. But the smaller ones, I put in the live well for bait. The bigger ones, I go in the ice chest because I'm going to eat those later.
Right.
You catch your squirrel fish, head back into Boca Raton Pass. Now, with this one, are you going to freeline them, or are you going to put a sinker on them? A lot of times what I do is I'll put about 4 ounces of lead on them, and I run my line down, I put a sinker, I put my line through an egg sinker, tie it to the swivel, I put about 5 feet of 60-pound fluorocarbon, and I'm going to use a 7-aught, 8-aught, or 9-aught hook, depending on the size of that squirrel fish, but nothing less than a 7-aught. I go either through the lips or across the nostrils with it. Now, I fish them that way. How do you fish them?
I'm fully in agreement with you on that one, and basically what you're doing is a traditional live bait tarpon rig at that point, the way you're describing it, or a Florida grouper rig. Same kind of concept. So if you're not familiar, I mean, your description is perfect and easy to follow, but that's another way to figure it out. The only reason why you use the egg sinker is because it's a little easier to control that squirrel fish, because they generally like to dive into structure. You know, they're a bottom dwelling fish. Now you skewered him, so he's wounded. His whole thing is when he's wounded, he wants to go hide. So having that sinker allows you to get down faster, but yet keep the control of the depth of where that fish is going to be without losing the big belly in the line.
Would you ever do something like a bobber stop and put him under one of those big floats, like under a bobber stop, to keep him at like 25, 30 feet?
I would probably do it out on the beach, but just because of the boat traffic out there being so frustrating
Yeah, you don't ever want to do something like that in the pass. I forgot about that. A lot of other boats, so it's a problem.
Yeah.
You don't want to keep them close to the boat.
It's a little frustrating. You know, you'd frustrate yourself, not just anybody else out there.
Well, somebody's going to run over your line, and they're going to take all the line off with their outboard, and they get a big problem with their seals.
And frustrated.
And, yeah, you're frustrated. Yeah. Okay.
More I than frustrated.
Yeah. All right.
But this time of year, I mean, you can use your squirrel fish, and your shrimp are obviously going to be your two best bets. But because you've got so many fish coming up from the Keys, and they're crossing Florida Bay, Everglades City, Fort Myers Beach, along with the intercoastal, they're feeding on mullet very heavily, mud minnows very heavily, which are a type of killifish, which are hard to find here but can be found.
Trying to get an order of those in.
They're also feeding on crabs and shrimp, you know, so all of those at times will work extremely well. So it's kind of nice to take out an arsenal with you, and even frozen finger mullet will work just fine, because you can't always find mullet for bait, and especially that right size. So frozen baits will work. You can take frozen thread fins, frozen finger mullet, all those will work. You know, it's just a matter of getting it right in front of their face, basically, and finding that one that says, hey, I just remember eating that about 27 miles ago, I'm gonna eat another one, you know. And that's where it comes into some serious fun and some good play. The main thing out there is, you know, like you said, lifting that rod slowly but firmly, and then reel as fast as you can when you get that bite on any of those baits, no matter what, because most of the time when that fish feels that little tiny prick of that hook, he's coming right to the surface. So you've got to reel as fast as you can to catch up to that fish, and then get your boat over the top of him and follow him and put as much pressure as you possibly can.
Well, the one thing people forget is they see the fish on the surface, and then that fish dives down to grab a bait, but he's making a big U-turn. He's going down to the bottom, and then he's coming back up again. Uh-huh. And so all you feel is the tiniest little thump on the rod. It's like a crappie bite, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
This little tiny thump, and you'll see the tip of the rod twitch just the tiniest bit. And you literally see it more than you feel it, because it's just, all you're feeling is when they grab the bait and start swimming up. And it's that swimming up that screws everybody up, because they're waiting for this big hit, this big thump, and they're going to get knocked to their knees. And I would say 1 in 500 fish grabs it and keeps going straight across the bottom, or actually goes down with it.
Right.
But that's 1 in 500 where, boom, and the rod goes right to the gunwale, and you can't hold them, and you're pulling up, and it's a fight, and you're just going crazy. Most of the time is this little tiny tap as they grab it at the bottom and they're swimming up with it. That's why whenever you think, I mean, if you just imagine you got a bite, you have to reel very quickly until you can actually see your bait, sinker, whatever, at the surface, drop it back down.
Absolutely.
That's the secret. But getting into and moving on, kind of as off the tarpon for just a moment, a lot of sharks out there. Any good shark spots?
Yeah, I mean, they're getting some decent sharks, black tips and spinners, because this time of year the water is cool enough that the spinner sharks will move in.
And they're two of my favorite because they jump up, they do literally, they jump out of the water, they do dancing, and they're crazy acrobatic fish.
Absolutely.
Amazing to catch. Everything you think of a tarpon in a shark.
Yeah, something with teeth.
Yeah, I mean, something that bites back.
You know, and the thing is, a lot of people get confused with spinners and black tips, and they both jump. So just because somebody tells you it was a spinner doesn't necessarily mean that it was, but you do have to properly identify them if you're going to keep them.
Does a spinner have a black anal fin?
Most of the time, but it's not 100%.
So the black tip never has a black tip on the anal fin.
Correct.
But a spinner may or may not have one on the anal fin.
Correct. It's
the
tricky.
Only way you know it's not a black tip is if it has a black tip on the anal fin.
Right.
Black tips on the other ones, but one is a white.
Yeah, it's funny.
You would think
it?
Black Opposite. Tip. They would name one that has all black tips on it.
You would think so.
Nope. There's one that doesn't.
Yeah.
So now we talked about the tarpon.
And one has a 54-inch limit.
Yeah, we talked about the tarpon with the 60-pound fluorocarbon. Now, most often, if I'm using a lighter rod looking for 3-4 fish, I use the AFW or American Fishing Wire bleeding leaders. That's my favorite. The little short 18-inch leader, tie it right to my line, go out, bend the barb down on the hook, and I catch tons of shark with it. But if you were going to go out looking for 6-foot sharks, what would you do for a leader, Robert?
Honestly, I'm still going to use probably my tarpon gear, because this time of year they are going to be in that 4 to 7 foot range. So the little ones are going to be, I'm going to water ski them for the most part, but the bigger ones, it's going to be fun on that tarpon rod. I use only about 18 inches of single strand piano wire, the American
okay.
Fishing Wire piano wire, number, what is it? I think it's either a 9 or a 10. It's like 98 pound or something like that.
So somewhere between 90 and 100 pound single strand leader, mm-hmm. about 18 inches.
About
then what
18
do you
inches.
Do?
And I've got a 7-aught J hook right on it. I use a J hook for all of my shark fishing, with the one and only exception when I fish it dead bait on the bottom with a sinker when I'm anchored up.
No, I always
but
take
I always
and bend
my
the
barb.
Yeah, I don't actually. I don't like flattening the barb. What I like to do is roll the point of the barb down, and it's really easy on the AFW bleeding shiners because their hook is a tremendously large barb that you can get just the end of it and roll it to the bottom, so it leaves kind of a bump there.
Right.
With some of the Mustads, Eagle Claws owners and all that, you end up crushing it a little bit more, but the trick is to try and just get the very, very tip of the barb, I mean the first 64th of an inch, and try and bend that down, because if you can leave a little bit of a bump there, it'll keep the bait on, keep the shark on, whereas barbless hooks are horrible. They're really just nasty hooks to use. So I want to leave a bump on there, and it works awesome. And when you get the shark up, you can literally just knock the hook out. Even if you end up having to cut the hook, let's say it's a very violent, very big shark, you don't want to get anywhere close to it, even if you cut it, by doing that to the barb, leaving that little bit of a bump there, he will literally just worry it out, and it will fall out, and he'll spit it out.
Right.
The same way he would a stingray barb, or maybe even a big crab claw or something, anything that he doesn't want to swallow, he can just spit out. And the same thing with that hook. You're not, as long as you do not have the barb in there, it's the reason I don't like using circle hooks on shark, is because I have to carry bolt cutters.
Yep.
Because there's no other way to get a circle hook out of a shark besides a bolt cutter, and it has to kind of fall out through the other end as the barb, it's going to come out
right.
the wrong way. But if you bend the barb down and use a J hook, it'll literally fall out.
Right.
And it's no worse. I mean, I can't tell you how many sharks I've caught that have stingray barbs all through their mouth.
Right.
And I have pulled stingray barbs. I used to have a big long pair of pliers, and I'd take pity on one, and I'd pull a few of those stingray barbs out of its tongue or out of its roof of its mouth, and doesn't seem to bother them, but you know, sometimes I feel bad because they've got all those barbs stuck in them when I'm getting my hook back.
Super high immunity to that poison and the actual barb itself, so they're very good about that. And you know, going to those hooks, me flattening out but rolling that edge over, that's why I use those galvanized hooks more than I use the higher end super 4 extra strongs or any of that stuff, because when you get into some of those, the black chrome hooks that have been really super treated and tempered, when you try to roll that point over, a lot of times it snaps off.
And that's just no good. Once they snap off, don't use it.
Yeah, because now it's unless got a sharp, jagged edge.
Unless you can actually file it down.
Yeah, I'm not going through all that.
I really enjoy sharks. We want to take the best possible care of them. I like eating them. I like catching them. Literally over the last many, many years, way too more than I want to remember, I've learned how to do this with sharks and have a almost no mortality rate with this.
Right.
Because it's fun. Now, with tarpon, with a shark, I want to use a pretty heavy rod and reel. Mm-hmm. And use your tarpon stuff. I'm mostly using my grouper stuff.
Right.
I like that shorter stuff, but you're still a little younger than I am. You like getting your butt kicked.
I
want to enjoy the fight, but I don't want to hurt when it's done.
Let's back up a little bit. I'm getting older because my brain still tells me I can do stuff and my body tells me I'm an idiot.
Isn't that amazing how that happened?
Oh, yes.
Mr. Lugowitz.
Yes, it's nice.
Robert had a young man come in the other day and says, "Are you Mr. Lugowitz?"
Yes, that was awesome. I forgot about that.
Is that your son?
I blocked it out of my mind. Dang. That stung.
Well, it's kind of funny because for the first 15 years Robert works here, everybody, and they still come in and ask me if he's my son, but they would always say, "Oh, is that your son?" and all that. And then that went on and on and on. Robert would always just laugh and laugh. And then one day, Andrew was working, and they came in, they looked at Robert and said, "Is that your boy?"
Yeah, another defining moment.
It hurts, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Mr. Lugowitz.
Yes, okay. Thanks. That was great. But that being said, I still would prefer my stand-up rod and my shark reel because it is a lot easier to fight those fish. But because I'm not necessarily going to haul all of my gear with me, I'm going to make sure I've got my tarpon rod with me because that's the intended
species.
See,
you still fish for tarpon. I don't.
Yeah. That's still.
I actually got
you do it for me.
Well, I'll sit in the boat while you do it.
Here, take this, Mr. Lugowitz.
We were out in Buckingham Pass, I think, with Danny Latham.
Yeah.
And I hooked one tarpon. I'm feeling okay. This is like a 60 pounder or something like that. All right. You know, landed. It's fun. Okay, good. And then the next fish I hooked it, and I got my rod way up at 11 o'clock, holding as high as I can, and next thing you know, that rod's all the way down by my knees, almost hitting the gunwale, and I'm like, "Robert, I got a fish for you. Here, buddy."
Yeah.
I'm like, "No, that one's not for me."
Yeah.
That one's going to be work.
It was.
It was. It kicked your butt. That was awesome.
And the greatest part about fish this time of year, you know, in August, they're much funner to catch because they wear out faster. But this time of year, the water temperature is so cool, so oxygenated. That 100-pound fish this time of year on average will be 30 to 45 minutes at best.
It's like watching a marathon runner in 60-degree weather versus a marathon runner in 90-degree weather.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing. That's the best way to describe it. Absolutely.
In 60-degree weather, they're running along, they're cool, they're okay, they're going. And in 90-degree weather, they go about 30 feet, and then they start getting sweated. And by the end of the marathon, they're kind of, "Yeah, this is really fun. I enjoyed myself so much." And they look like they just got put through a washing machine,
absolutely.
Same thing with tarpon. But if you're going to go out, the big question we get is, did the red tide kill all the fish? No.
Nope.
Did the red tide kill some? Yes. Was it horrific? No. Was it bad? Yes. But it's kind of like a tornado. Did it hit your house? Did it hit your bay? Did it hit your island where you were fishing? And that can make a big difference because there was never red tide in the harbor this year. Most of the harbor didn't change at all. No. We have a lot of fish. Everything's kind of the same as it always was. But now if you're up around Lemon Bay, that really hurt there. And some of the Sarasota Bay stuff, they really got a lot of their butt kicked and lost a lot of fish. But it's the difference is it's like a tornado. If it hit your house, it was the worst tornado ever. But you know, half a block away, they didn't even notice it happened.
It's like with Charlie with us.
So, you know, when these bad things happen, in some of these areas, it really hurt. Mostly what hurt was fake news. Mm-hmm. When they would say, you know, there's red tide everywhere and you're going to get sick and do all that, it put a lot of people in bad straits. Waiters, waitresses, cooks, taxi drivers, you know, gas station people, restaurants, hotels, bait tackle shops. We know of several restaurants that closed down last year. We know of at least five bait and tackle stores that closed down on the west coast of Florida.
Oh, yeah.
But, so, you always want to know where it was and where it was hitting, where it wasn't. But, in Charlotte Harbor, we actually have a pretty good redfish population right now. Mm-hmm. They're doing better along the east side. The mica cutoff's actually doing way better than it should be. But right. You were talking about on the west side of the harbor, on the west wall, it's kind of a weird thing right now because with this warm water, the snook are in, as your favorite, transition migratory phase. Okay, and so on the west wall, what's going on? You got one half with this and one half with that.
Yeah, the upper half has got a lot of snook cruising down it, heading towards the passes. And then they start to thin out a little bit as they get a little bit further south. There's still good numbers there, but you'll notice like from the halfway point, which is about where the radio tower is at, from there up towards Myakka seems to be much better numbers of snook of all sizes. And then from there down, it seems to be redfish kind of breaking it up a little bit with better numbers of them. And the snook are peppered in with them, just like the redfish are peppered going north. But it's like they switch roles at that halfway point where the numbers start to get different on both sides.
So on the south end of the west wall, we got a lot of redfish. On the north end of the wall, we have a lot of snook. Now, there are snook and redfish all along at both of them, but definitely more on this side and definitely more on that side, different right. species. I'm not sure why that would be, except for this winter was so cold. We had a ton of fish in the Myakka River, a ton of snook in the Peace River. The canals were loaded up with snook, all that. And so those fish are leaving the Myakka River, the Peace River, the canals. They're going down because they think it's spawning time. The water is warm. It went from very, very cold to very, very warm very quickly.
Right.
Now, for snook, if you can find white bait, thread fins, sardines, any of these baits out there, if you can use a sabiki or cast net and catch your own live bait fish, you're going to do much, much better right now.
Yes.
That is what they're going to key in. That's what they're going to target on. But with the redfish, what are we hearing bait-wise with them? Is it a white bait thing right now? Is it a shrimp? Is it a crab? What's going on with the redfish?
Still a huge part of it is shrimp right now. They're catching a few on what little bit of white bait they're trying to find out there, but the shrimp are the primary food source. And then the other thing that's been working incredible over there on that west wall, topwaters.
Really?
The topwater bite's been incredible. And the weirdest part is, as beautiful and as hot and sunny as it is, it's been off and on all day long, guys are telling me.
The one thing about it is
opposite of the rules we know.
Yeah, but my rules changed on topwaters over the last couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, topwater fishing was before daylight to maybe 9, 10 o'clock.
Right.
And then I was done with topwaters. And then, you know, 2 hours after and 2 hours before. 2 hours after the sun rises, 2 hours before the sun sets. Kind of the best topwater times.
Mm-hmm.
But I have modified that now because I know it's not true.
Right.
I know it's true if you're in 6 feet of water or more. But once you're in 3 feet of water or less, you can use topwaters all day. It took me years to figure this out.
I heard you telling somebody that the other day, and it's absolutely, it's actually one of those mind-blowing thoughts that actually made a whole lot of sense.
And I've been studying this and studying it and studying it. And it takes me a while, but I do catch on eventually. And what it is when a fish is in shallow water, they're looking ahead of them. They're not looking straight up at the surface. They're looking at something on the surface several feet in front of them. They can look across the flats and see the top of the water and the bottom of the sand. So they're seeing the ground all the way up to the surface. So a topwater plug going across there is very visible to them. And when you have a fish in deeper water, they look up to see something, and the light blinds them. They have no eyelids. They cannot squint. And that bright sunlight just makes it impossible to see top waters in the middle of the day. But in the shallow water, they can look across that shallow water and see that lure on the surface.
Right.
They're not looking up, they're looking ahead. That was the difference. Because I've had customers who've used top water on the flats all day long, and I could never figure out why this was possible. And then
why they
dawned
were so
on me,
successful.
Yeah, why is this working? It shouldn't. Every rule I know about top waters is once it's 9, 10 o'clock in the morning till, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, don't bother. It's not going to work. They can't see it. But it did work on the flats. And finally it dawned on me. They're looking ahead of them, seeing the surface, not looking above them to see the surface.
Right. It makes so much sense. I mean, it's
if
almost
you, if you listen to the last three shows and didn't pick up anything, if you pick that up, that is a remarkable thing. That's 40 years worth of thinking. It took me 38 years of thinking about it to figure that out, but I got it. I'm slow, but I get there.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's a brilliant idea.
But then again, people have been fishing for a couple hundred years recreationally, and I'm the first one who said it, so
right.
It took me 38 years, but I'm 150 years ahead of everybody else.
Absolutely.
So,
right. So topwater has been incredible. It's worth trying and being ready for it right now.
I like the old 5M, 7M mirror lures. I like these, the Skitter V, the Skitter Walk, the Top Pup, but a lot of lures you got to walk the dog with. You got to have a really kind of specific set of skills to do that, because you've got to keep the tip of the rod moving, and it slashes the bait from side to side. As you jerk it, it pops the lure up, creating slack, which makes it fall to the other side. Then the slack gets snapped again, which flicks the lure back to the other side. But it's a lot of reeling and twitching and reeling and twitching. But you can take a 7M mirror lure and you throw it out and just give it a little pull, real hard short pull, and it should go chick, and watch, and it'll float back to the surface. Then you give it a hard snap again, it goes chick, and it goes under the surface, only traveling a few inches forward, and it goes from the surface, makes a chick noise, and then just comes back up to the top, drifts back up, and then goes down. It's kind of a wounded bait fish. Very simple lure to use, except you have to have a lot of patience.
Yes.
Because it's just down under,
twitch,
wait
pause,
for it to float back up.
Twitch, pause.
And let it float back up. And you literally have to see it coming back to the top. It works great. I've caught my first big snook on that. My first big snook on the top water was caught on that. But aside from the walk the dog top waters, the Whopper Plopper came out, and which has a rotating rear end on it, much like a buzzbait would.
Mm-hmm.
And then Berkeley came out with a prop lure that's actually really kind of nice and simple for people to use, and snook and redfish will definitely hit it.
Absolutely.
It's a little more minnow shaped. It's not as short as the Whopper Plopper, but it's a dead ripoff.
Right.
They both have the different styles. Change it 15-20%. We didn't steal anything. It's kind of like Bass Pro. We didn't steal anything. It's just, ours is different. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you pull this along and you can just reel it in slowly, which is what I would do for redfish. But if you want snook to hit it, it's got to be a start and a stop. If you're going after redfish on the top water, get it so the back of the lure is just rotating, slosh, 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 and they'll hit it. But with a snook, a trout, they want it to go blah, 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 stop, blah, 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 stop. Mm-hmm. And those are the things that are going to make the difference. Snook, trout, start, stop. Redfish, slow, steady.
Yes.
That's really the kind of rule for topwater that I have with those.
No, for a lot of people who are down from up north or have moved down from up north that brought their tackle boxes with them, there's two lures that they've got in their box, I promise you, that work absolutely amazing, too, for topwaters. And that's either a tiny torpedo or a jitterbug.
Yeah, I'll go with that. Smithwick Devil Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Now Yozuri has a prop bait that's actually very cool, and it looks to me like a newer version of the old Bangalore. has a single prop in the back. Yeah. It's long like a Smithwick, but it doesn't have two props. It has a single one in the back. And they say it has a iridescent, radiant, I don't know. It's a plastic frickin' prop. But it looks like a good lure. And Rapala has one out with props on both ends of it, much like the old Smithwick did. And both of those, you do the same thing. You reel them just to keep the blades moving for redfish or start and stop them. But the nice thing is about any of those, you don't have to, you know, just keep working that rod. It's a lot easier on your wrist. If you get tired of, like, work with the top water, you can use these and do a lot of the starting and stop and make it work. One thing that wake baits, now Strike King used to have a great wake bait out, W-A-K-E, like the wake of a boat. And the one I've been selling a lot of is the Yozuri. It comes in two sizes. I like the smaller one better. And I like the gold one. I think it's going to go really good on the redfish. But if you're doing it in a kayak and you're paddling along with a kayak and want to drag a lure behind you, this will swim along. It stays within the first 6 inches of the water. Ideally, right at the surface where you can kind of see a wake of it coming across. If you go a little bit faster, it will drive down, but never more than 6 inches. It's great for the guys paddling the kayak through shallow water because they can catch fish on it. It's not going to snag up in the bottom.
Right. I like that.
If you really don't know how to use the top water and you really don't, you know, okay, I get that I'm supposed to pull it and it's supposed to do this, but you're not confident with it, go to a wake bait and reel it slowly. It will swim right across. You can literally see the top of the lure coming across the surface in an S pattern, serpentining, you know, and all you have to do is throw it out, reel it in slowly, and you will catch fish and you will see them hit it. It's right at the surface. It's every bit of a top water. And I've been selling a ton of those Yozuri wake baits.
Right.
I've been looking for them in some other brands, but it's hard to find wake baits. What's those guys, the ones that aren't very nice?
The PETA lure.
Yeah, the PETA lure. All the fun of fishing, but you don't have to worry about hurting the fish.
Live Target.
Live Target. Live Target's got a wake bait as well.
Yes.
And it's a really good-looking bait.
It swims amazing.
And what I'm looking for is normal lures, crankbaits, have a lip on them.
Mm-hmm.
And that lip is usually out at a 30 to 45 degree angle from the lure itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on a wake bait, it should be at a 90 degree angle, straight down.
Straight down.
The straighter it is, the less it's going to dive, the more it's going to swim. The more out to the front of the lure, the deeper it's going to dive and swim. Mm-hmm. And most lures want to go down 3 to 5 feet, so at a 30 to 45 degree angle. You're looking for one where it goes straight down below the lure. And that's just going to swim side to side, but it's not going to take it under.
No, I like that a lot. And that's another easy to use lure. I mean, literally just
snook, redfish, trout, anything on the flat.
Change your retrieve up a little bit. So if you're fishing in that 3 feet of water or less, it's absolutely amazing. And the lack of snags, if you've got that rolling moss or a turtle grass around, it'll stay a bit above most of it.
And my dad will always say, the reason I like it, it's an idiot bait. You throw it out, you reel it in, you catch a fish. That's why I like it, because any idiot can use it. You know, my dad always called the stuff I liked idiot baits because, well, it's my dad. What else is he going to say?
That was his famous pet name for you. Yeah, no, I get that. They're just, it's a great bait to keep at, you know. The other one is just, a lot of the soft plastics are working too, because we are at that really neat time of year where the white bait's starting to come in, but shrimp are still working, bait fish are starting to work. The water is super, super clear out there, so no matter what species you're trying...
We're in that transitional state, Robert.
You know, but the water is very, very clear, so change up your colors. Don't just stick with your normal root beer gold glitter or your watermelon or your gold flake or any of that stuff. Occasionally try something totally off the wall, like bubble gum, nuclear chicken, chartreuse, just plain white. Change some stuff up and see what's going to happen, because that water is so neat this time of year, but yet frustrating because those fish will focus on one color.
If I was going to go up to the wall and say pick some DOA Cal Shads or any one of the soft plastic stuff, I'm going to find the one I think is most likely to catch a fish.
Correct.
And that's what I'm going to buy. This time of year, my second bag that I'm going to buy is I'm going to look at all the different colors, same style of bait, but I'm going to pick what I think is the ugliest, dumbest, stupidest color. Why would anybody even make that color? And that's going to be my number two choice. I want the one I like the most, and the one I think is absolutely the worst, dumbest, ugliest, nastiest thing ever, you know, a person could create color on a lure.
Right.
Because chances are that's the one that's going to work.
Yep. It is, you know, funny that way.
We go through and we pick out these gorgeous, perfect-looking baits that have exact fish patterns. Like Rapala has this absolutely amazing little balsa bait in the Balsa Extreme series. It is perfect. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be my number one choice to throw. But if that one would not work, then I'm going to be looking around the store finding what is the ugliest, dumbest, most weird-looking, obnoxious thing in that same kind of thing.
I'm digging through my tackle box and see if I can find one of those little Budweiser lures.
Yeah, and that's probably what they're going to hit on. Because
something totally obscure, like, really? What's going to eat this?
Yeah.
Who bought me this? Because I didn't buy it.
I think it was me, by the way.
You know what I mean, yeah, though?
Because I had the Coors Light one, the Bud Light one. I had the Lining Kugels. Had all those beer can lures for quite a while.
But that's usually with me.
I haven't thought about those in a while. I got to look and see if I still got any.
I'd look at those lures, and some of those lures, I look in my tackle box, I go, yep, somebody gave me this for a Christmas or birthday gift because I didn't buy this color. But that's the one that usually ends up working at the end of the day.
Ladyfish, snappers, any spots to go just have a bunch of fun with some kids or northerners or something?
Honestly, I'd go after the bonnet heads that are down there on the Cape Hayes Bar and just inside Turtle Bay, because the bonnet heads are there, but the ladyfish have been there. There's been a few Spanish mackerel mixed in with them and an oddball trout. So you kind of can get that whole gamut using the same rod, same shrimp, everything.
You're going to take shrimp for bait, and basically it's just free lining a shrimp. So hook them through the head, toss them out away from the boat. You're likely to catch bonnet sharks, Spanish mackerel, trout, ladyfish. All these fish will be there off that Cape Hayes Peninsula. And, you know, nothing more fun if you've got friends coming down from up north, which is usual this time of year. Yes. They want to get away from their lives and down to where their friends live, who live in paradise, you know.
Right, exactly.
So they're down here, and what more fun than catching some mackerel and some ladyfish and all these fun fish, and then hook a shark every once in a while, all on the same bait.
Absolutely.
Same rig. You don't have to change anything. Works great.
And with the way the weather is really, really beautiful right now, going to any of these little nearshore reefs like Helen's Reef, Trembly Reef, or Novak Reef, they're holding a lot of grunts, a lot of small snapper.
All right, we only got about 3 minutes, 2 minutes left. So where's your best, I'm going to drive up and fish from land spot, pier, bridge, whatever. What's the best bet for this weekend?
I'm going to go to Placida.
Placida
will be my absolute choice. The sheep's head have really moved back in there because it's warming up. So I think a lot of the sheep's head that moved into the intercoastal and the bushes and the flats are getting pushed out because it's getting so warm that they're moving to that little bit deeper water. So the sheep's head are there, Spanish mackerel, bonnet heads, few trout, few small mangrove snapper. I'm gonna at least bend a rod. I may not catch a bunch of big quality fish, but I am definitely gonna bend the rod without a doubt.
All right. And your bait you're gonna take, fiddler crabs, blue crabs, shrimp. What are you going to take?
Shrimp. 100% shrimp. I'll take a few fiddler crabs, but my confidence is always in shrimp for mixed variety of things.
But I would be taking a couple different types of bait. I'd take some shrimp, maybe some silver side, some fiddler crabs. I'm going to take a couple of different choices with me just because while I'm going to think the shrimp works, I might know. It's just like with the lures. I want to take something else. And the silver sides are a really good bet off that pier right now. They're small, like anchovy minnows. They work really good. We can't get them.
5 weeks now without them.
All right. Fiddler crabs?
Fiddler crabs would be my next choice. Absolutely.
Okay. If you can't get those, maybe some threadfin sardines, something that are bright and shiny that you can cut up into pieces and drop down.
Yeah.
Might be a real good bet.
A lot of scent, a lot of flash. Plus, when you cut those up, the scales fall off as you put them in the water. You already cut it, and then you pierce it with a hook, you get that really glitter effect. So you've got a mixture of all that when you cut those baits up. That's what I really like about cut thread fins and sardines.
Yeah, I do too. And I always cut them like on the railing so I can scrape whatever kind of, you know, comes remnants off. I can scrape that into the water.
Yeah.
Always good bet. Absolutely. You know, I miss RJ.
Yeah.
You know, it's not quite the same doing it with without RJ.
No, it's definitely a little different.
Yeah, so anyway, we're down to the last half a minute here, counting down the show. You guys are almost done with us. You don't have to put up with us for another week. Fish and Frank here in the chair. Robert in the chair across from me. Any last words, Robert?
Go out and enjoy the beautiful weather and enjoy your family while you can.
Yeah, Fish and Frank here saying thanks for listening, boys and girls. Stop in at the store. We've got all kinds of renovations. All the seminars are on hold for a little while. Believe it or not, we have more remodeling to do. We're adding a lot more cool stuff. We got to remodel out and back. So, Fish and Frank here, Robert there, RJ missing. Bye bye.
I said fish, 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 fish. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind. You know.